And at that time, for whatever reason, I had a cough and I strained a cough and I thought that I shit my pants. So I'm like, there's no coming back from this. I'm going to have to go the full way to Bob's. I can't return back and say bathroom emergency, you know. So I would like to report that I did not shit my pants. I'm sure you're recording.
Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
My wife. She is pain in my asshole.
Visit us at IHateCritics.net, Everyone's a Critic Podcast.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our handle there is Critics Pod. Follow us there for the 30-year-old movies, Sean's reviews, the podcast, interaction, trailers, etc., etc. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Subscribe to wherever you listen to us. Write and review the show. It helps us move up the charts. And share the podcast with your friends. The best way to help support the podcast is Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. Get yourself a credit on the show and random merch every 6 to 10, 12 months. I feel like doing it. But if you want your merch faster, go to TeePublic. We have a merch store through there at the ihatecritics.net. There's a little podcast merch tab that'll take you to our store, and you can pick up one of our 3 shirts, the Lord of the Fitbit, Everyone's a Critic, and I Hate Critics, and then our logo shirt. It's all there.
It fits a wee bit small,
yeah.
Just so you know. So you may want to go to a size that you're not usually going to get even on your worst day. And then, if it still doesn't fit, find the spinach and start eating it.
Yeah. I noticed one of the, like, most of my shirts are fine. One of them is a little tighter than the other one. So, but yeah, I always recommend, unless you like wearing tight shirts.
yeah, no.
We'll start with trailers before we get to any news. We'll start with Triple Frontier. Did you see that one?
Triple Frontier, which one was that?
Ben Affleck, Oscar.
Oh, I did see that one, yeah.
Netflix movie?
Yeah, this looks really familiar. Doesn't it? Like, we've seen something like this before. A group of ex-military try to pull off a heist of some sort. They're robbing drug dealers in Colombia, I think, in this one. I felt just the entire time, other than the cast, like I'd seen this story before and had seen these characters before. And while I like Oscar Isaac and Ben Affleck, I don't know. Like I said, I feel like I've seen this before.
I agree with you, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but now that we're saying it out loud, Three Kings comes to mind. And but also, for whatever reason, watching this trailer, I was thinking of The Kingdom. That kept coming to mind, which is not the greatest film in the world, of course, but
yeah.
Looks-wise, it kind of had that going for it. And I can't remember who it is that directs this, but something about that told me that the writer or the director was somebody that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, now that you say that, totally slipped my mind.
Like Taylor Sheridan? Am I thinking of that guy, Hell or High Water and all that? I feel like it might be his film.
Didn't Willem Dafoe basically play this character in one of the Jack Ryan movies?
Of course. The famous character that I'm, of course, forgetting now. that Michael B. Jordan is hinted to play John Clark, the special ops guy. Yeah. He was played by Willem Dafoe and also Liev Schreiber in The Sum of All Fears.
It was the director of A Most Violent Year.
Oh, J.C. Chandor. Yes.
Yeah, which was one of my favorite movies that year.
He's a very good director. But just the story feels very familiar.
Well, yeah, even throwing away the ex-military, it seems, you know, movies like The Town and Heat, you know, there's a lot of movies like this that come to mind, just a group of people getting together to do bad things. But I like the cast and I like the director, so I'm definitely on. And I like Netflix, so it's Long Shot.
Long Shot, yes. Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron. She is the Secretary of State running for president. He's a reporter, and she hires him to work on her campaign to write her speeches. Another story that feels a little bit familiar from somewhere else. Not sure. Just I guess it was that scene in the trailer that's the two of them sitting in this kind of darkened room that looks like it's a mess after some kind of thing happened, and it's just like, oh, that's the Knocked Up scene. Like, I love Seth Rogen, and Charlize Theron is fantastic, but again, I've seen too many movies, apparently, because this also felt really familiar, even as it was still kind of funny.
Yeah, if you start off by saying Seth Rogen in something there, yeah, I've got just a little tinge of possible dislike there, but political films, regardless of who's starring in them, if they do it right, it can always be very engrossing. I've usually liked everything that I've seen in that particular subject that I guess aligns with my beliefs. So, I mean, if I started to label all of these political films that I like, I'm going to be going down the Hollywood, liberal side of everything. So I probably shouldn't say anything more. But I mean, I'm sure it would be interesting. And Charlize Theron is obviously fantastic, and there's no reason not to see it.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, it looks fun, so I'm excited about it, or excited enough. Aladdin. I mean, we recorded last week right before this trailer,
right.
Or like maybe the trailer dropped while we were recording, so
it's
we
possible.
Didn't get to see it. But everybody else is making fun of it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, there's a lot to make fun of here. Will Smith looks ridiculous. I know, hopefully in the movie it gets better, but in the trailer he looks ridiculous. And it to the point of it almost looks embarrassing.
Of all of the Disney adaptations, this so far looks like the one that I'm least interested in. There's just something a little stale about how everything looks. And then, yeah, I guess I can understand why they waited to reveal him for such a long time. If that was going to be their final product, it's at least underwhelming. So if they weren't going to do it perfectly, I wonder why they did it at all, other than they plan to do this the whole time, make every single one of their supposed animated classics a live action film.
That's an interesting point, because this does feel perfunctory. It feels like something not that Disney was aching to do, like somebody was wanting desperately to make this. Kind of like Cinderella felt like somebody really wanted to do something with that story, like he had a vision for that. This feels like, well, no, okay, now we got Aladdin next, let's just get this over with. And they slapped something together, and they just got Will Smith to be in it, and that's not a good feeling. Disney doesn't usually make mistakes like this with this type of thing that turns into an immediate negative meme, and that's really surprising.
Yeah, I really don't know how I feel. I still haven't seen Cinderella, so I'm putting that one aside. But like Beauty and the Beast was almost a shot for shot remake. Lion King looks to be the same, and this kind of looks like that as well. And I don't know how you do that without making somebody look ridiculous as the genie. And if you're doing that, to me, Will Smith's the only one that can kind of survive something like that.
I would have said Jim Carrey. I think Jim Carrey probably could still pull that off.
Okay, maybe. He could probably pull it off. I just can't see
him doing
it. At
least he wouldn't look as silly as Will Smith does. I think Will Smith looks silly.
Well, I don't think I guess I'm assuming Jim Carrey at this point in his career wouldn't do that based on
that Norwegian murder movie that he made.
And yeah, and that documentary about, behind the scenes of Man on the Moon, and then his thing he did with Seinfeld and the Comedians in Cars. So I'm just assuming he wouldn't do that. But yes, I mean, I suppose if I could cast anybody, then maybe I could find somebody else. But based on that, working actors that could get away with something like this, I don't know. I think it could still be different because, like, it's Will Smith, and I don't think it's going to be great. I think there's a glass ceiling on this movie, but in terms of at least reaching that ceiling, I still think there's a possibility, but I'm not excited about it or anything like that.
The one thing that I will say about the cast, they did at least based on what I was reading, Disney did cast actors that should be in those roles for the most part. Will Smith, I guess you don't know where a genie is from, but as this takes place in, is it Persia, Egypt? It's in the Middle East. Okay, so they got Middle Eastern actors to portray the main roles. That makes me happy that they bothered to at least do something like that. You didn't have a Ridley Scott, like, make Sigourney Weaver the Pharaoh's wife or whatnot. So, yeah. I'll say that about it. If that means anything.
But we'll see how that affects the budget. Or not the budget, but the profit and the money they're trying to make on it.
I'm just a little surprised that Disney allowed themselves to shoot themselves in the foot like this with this first image of him. I thought maybe they'd do more to protect him and make sure that, you know, test it out and make sure that this looks right. Because, I mean, they botched this from the very beginning, even when it leaked on Instagram a few weeks ago, the look of him, they'd already started making fun of it. And then, of course, they put it in the trailer and people start making fun of it even more. I would have thought Disney would have workshopped this a little more.
But again, I can survive people making fun of it, because the people making fun of it aren't necessarily your audience. It's yeah. The kids of the people making fun of it. I mean, it looks like the genie. I mean, but it's live action, so it's silly. I don't think it looks any stupider than the cartoon did. It just...
It looked to me like... It looked like a fake trailer, almost. Like a fan made it. Like
something Jimmy Kimmel would do. Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
It almost... That's the level of unreality that they went with. And it's to the point of almost amateur hour with it. And that's kind of what bothered me about it. I couldn't believe this was a Disney product. At the very least, Disney makes their stuff look really professional for the most part. Jungle Book, I'm not a fan of that movie, but it looked amazing the first time you saw that trailer.
Yeah, that speaks to something. They were able to make an orangutan do everything that they needed an orangutan to do, but with CGI to create that whole Louis song, King Louis in Jungle Book. And they've got a bear talking and everything like that. Well, we're working with a human here, so you don't have to do like too much weird stuff, right? You just have to make his color blue. So there was still an uncanny valley, despite the fact that it's a human. Keep in mind one last thing, too. This movie's being released May 29th. It's February. That's 3 months away. They released that Lion King trailer like a number of months ago, and that's not coming out till June, July. So I think that also says something about the confidence Disney has in their own product. If it wasn't even ready at the same time Lion King was, that having to wait this long gives me pause.
Yeah. Yesterday.
I love this trailer. I really do. Danny Boyle and the writers of Love Actually, I mean, that's a pretty great combination. Then you've got the music of the Beatles and this really clever premise about a guy who is the only person who realizes that somehow in this universe the Beatles don't exist and sets about making their music. That is a really clever idea, and the trailer really, really pulls that off.
Okay. It's important for me to note this. Now, you can ask at least a couple of different people. That idea is the idea for a screenplay that I've always had for about 15 years now. And it's my only time travel idea, too, where despite the mechanism for which I'm using for time travel, I'm not going to say that, but that somebody goes back and becomes a musician and writes the music of somebody that nobody knows exists at that moment and becomes famous that way. Now, I watched this trailer with Beth, and she's like, "So they stole your idea." And I'm like, well, somebody had another good idea to go with it, but it's not just the Beatles music. Like, never in a million years would I have chosen their catalog, but it makes sense.
Pick like Chuck Berry and Michael J. Fox could have done it or something like that.
Right. You know, I wonder if the genesis of my thought came from that, but idea-wise, yeah, I'm sold on that. That's cool, but
the greatest band of all time. Not them.
I know. I can so easily quantify the greatest band of all time thing, too. It's something that I should clearly see.
I'm talking about mass opinion. They're not my favorite band either. They're like number five, maybe. Oh, or you could have done what Hot Tub Time Machine did and became Motley Crue, I suppose. Which one do you want?
Less disease. So not Motley Crue.
They're all still alive.
Very true.
Next week for that trailer, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're releasing it tomorrow. Netflix movie. Sean, do you want to predict the Oscars?
Yeah, I can do that. I think, optimistically, I do think Black Panther has a real chance of winning Best Picture because it does have the least amount of doubters, the least objections to it among the Academy nominees. Because there's a block out there that really doesn't like Green Book. At the same time, I'm going to go with the cynical side and say that Green Book's going to win simply because the Academy is very old and they loved Driving Miss Daisy. And I think they see another opportunity here to pat themselves on the back and say, hey, look at the movie we picked. And that's going to be Green Book.
Well, I'm really picking either one of those as I'm patting themselves on the back saying, hey, look what movie we picked.
I think Black Panther is slightly more bold just because of the nature of it. I think.
But it's still a patting yourself on the back. Cause I mean, you have A Star Is Born in there, which is far superior to both movies. What else is there? There's other. Man, they nominated some shit movies, though.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody shouldn't be in there.
No.
But
isn't that Adam McKay movie in there?
Vice, yeah, that piece of crap.
I can't even remember what's the only one I really liked on there.
Well, Black Klansman.
Oh, yeah. There's your pick that's bold
I mean,
and
if,
good.
If the world were just, but this is not a just world.
Well, right.
No, yeah, like I said, I think Black Panther has a shot, and I'm okay with that because I really like Black Panther, and I think it deserves to be there. But the cynical side of me says, even though I didn't mind Green Book, I think it's so easy. It's such an easy movie, and it's such an old people movie. That's the one they're going to go with. I think Rami Malek is going to win Best Actor over my slight objection. I think he's great. I think the movie is so shitty that he doesn't deserve to win. Best Actress is now, of course, all of it would be slipping my mind right now. Probably going to be... Oh, gosh. It's not Olivia Colman. It's the other one who's been winning everything. Glenn Close. Glenn Close. Oh, okay. Yeah, Rachel Weisz is in supporting. Yeah, so I think Glenn Close is actually going to win because I think there's a lot of, again, old people support for a movie that nobody else saw. I'm like, me and the Academy, we're the ones who saw that movie.
The Favorite is another one. I read an article from The Guardian that they're based out of England saying that The Favorite is the one that should win. And just
for
reading what the
movie or for acting?
For Best Picture because of the topics it covers, et cetera.
See, that's not why you pick a movie, because of the topics it covers.
Obviously, yeah.
I like The Favorite for performances, sure. You know, nominate any of them. Let them win. I don't really care about that. But the movie, it's on the next level down, I think. It's still good, but...
It's quite a good movie, but there's a lot of old people objections to that movie. It's harsh. It's kind of nasty in its way, and has a nasty sort of subject matter and sense of humor, and that tends to turn the Academy off.
Anything else you wanna? I mean, does Regina what's her name?
Regina Hall?
Yes, Regina Hall. Is she gonna win?
Yes, that one's good. That's at least gonna be. There's gonna be one moment of justice in the entire night, and it'll be that.
That's like the only thing I want to see. Like, I'm and they usually do the supporting actress early, don't they? Or
yeah, it's usually right there in the first hour.
I think I'm wrong about that. Regina King.
King.
Yeah, Regina King.
Regina That's Hall why I didn't say her last name. Yeah. I didn't want to say the wrong last name.
Yeah. I confuse them all of the time. It has nothing to do with them having the same, like, they're in projects that I see, and I'm like, oh, there's Nia Long, there's Regina Hall and Regina King, and for whatever reason, I cannot remember which one goes with which. I'll see Nia Long, and you know, I get what the popular opinion of why I would switch them up would be, but that's not the case.
My
it's
wife,
just them.
My wife always confuses Gerard Butler and Josh Brolin.
Aw, poor Josh Brolin,
right?
Well, she rented that movie he did with.
Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman. And I was like, why would you get this? And she was like, you don't like any, you don't like this guy, Gerard Butler? I'm like, no, he was in No Country for Old Men. Or she didn't even say that. She merged two movies together. I can't remember what she said, but it was pretty funny. Anyway, any other? I mean, what's the, what does A Star Is Born get for being the best of all the movies listed?
Best song. Song.
That's pretty, we get to watch Bradley Cooper. I guess they get all the money from that song on the radio all the time.
Yeah, it's on the radio all the time. Yeah, that'll get best song. And I still, you know, even though it didn't get, even though it didn't get a Best Picture nomination, I still think Bo Burnham's going to walk away with an Oscar for Eighth Grade for writing.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's where you put the really, the actual good movies in the writing categories.
Yeah, Almost Famous, Big Sick.
Yeah.
We won last year. That horror movie.
Shape of Water. Was that the best one picture of them.
Winner. No, you're thinking of the writing categories.
Get Out.
Get Out, yeah.
Yeah. Oscars. Any other news before we move on to our show?
Rest in peace, Ben Affleck, Batman.
Sad face. They retired his bat jersey on is it Kimmel that he was on? Yeah. I mean, that's obvious that that kind of thing was going to happen, but there's just, there's so much turnover and so many decisions that just never get made for these films, and I don't know, I feel bad about it because I actually really liked him in the role, and him opposite of the other ones, they had a good group going on there. They still have some good ones, but I really wonder what this new Batman film is going to be about and how they're going to do it. And just read an article about a half hour before coming in that Armie Hammer really is the top choice for Batman.
How old is he?
Great, but not significantly younger than Ben.
I thought
Affleck.
The big deal was going to be a younger Batman. That was the whole point of this new
Armie Hammer is still in his 20s. Ben's, you know, in his 40s.
His 40s. Oh, I didn't realize Armie was in his 20s.
Yeah, too. I didn't know that either.
He's like 20 to 28, 29, I think. Maybe close to 30, but yeah, he's still relatively young.
I just assumed mid-30s. I had nothing to base it on. I just assumed it. I don't know. They should just start over. I mean, I know Wonder Woman's good and all that, but it doesn't matter. You've ruined everything else. Either do her own little movie and just keep making her little universe, or start over with something else completely.
I just don't think that they're going to do a team up anytime in the next 5 years at least, and everything is going to be a standalone with maybe a visitor or two.
All right. Alita Battle Angel.
James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez. Rosa Salazar is Alita. She is a cyborg. Christoph Waltz is a doctor who finds her in a scrapyard and brings her back to life, gives her a new body, and slowly but surely she begins to regain her memory and find out who she was, which is a warrior. She's a warrior from another planet. And she's got all these warrior abilities, and she begins fighting these other cyborgs in this future universe where there are scavengers who rob people of their body parts so they can sell them on the black market, the robot body parts. And there's all much of the universe centers on this game of Motorball, where they basically, it's just murder ball. They just kind of kill each other. These robots kind of just kill each other and tear each other apart on roller skates. It doesn't sound very good, but two-thirds of this movie are actually really compelling. I was deeply into this movie. Rosa Salazar is quite good, and she has a solid romance with another newcomer whose name is escaping me at this moment, but I really actually did buy into it, even though I didn't expect to, because he seems like kind of like Josh Hutcherson light when you first see him, but he really grows into it. Like I said, the first part of the story, the first two-thirds of the story are really compelling. Christoph Waltz is really good. The direction is really solid. And then you get your first glimpse of a cameo late in the movie of a bad guy who's supposed to be the bad guy of the future series. And you can't help but just burst out laughing when you see him because he looks so ridiculous. I mean, he looks absolutely, utterly ridiculous. And I burst out laughing when I saw him. And from there, it was just downhill from there. There's a point just about the start of the third act where the lead character, Alita, makes this decision to be loyal to this warrior code that she was only kind of iffy about before. And she makes a choice that I just didn't buy into. And from there, the movie just goes downhill and downhill and downhill, making one bad decision after another until it reaches an ending that was really unsatisfying, to the point where I don't really recommend the movie, honestly, because the third act is so very bad. But the first two-thirds of the movie, this is a really good film and really exceptionally well-made. It's a bummer that they really botched the ending.
Almost $200 million budget.
Yeah, and a $27 million opening weekend. But, you know, international will probably make the big difference on this one.
Yeah, I mean, they're already up to 37, at least domestically, as of today. I don't know. I know the cameo is. They're just setting up a sequel that's not going to happen, right? Or do you think it'll make its money back enough?
Like I said, it all depends on what it does in Asia, mostly. If it goes to $400-500 million worldwide, they'll probably do another one.
You know, the weird thing is, I'm not involved in anime whatsoever or Japanese manga or anything like that, but it's got a large following. Kind of like when we talked about Ghost in the Shell a couple years ago, almost now, I talked about a sect of friends that really, really enjoyed that in that particular type of entertainment. And so this week, in the past week or so, has been a lot of lead up to Alita saying, like, oh, I'm not really sure, but then I read review X, Y, and Z, and then the critical consensus is kind of middling. And all I know is that I've known about this project for about 15 years. I remember hearing James Cameron say, no, that one's going to be my next one, when everyone was asking him, what's your next movie? What's your next movie? And now we don't care. Like, we don't want to know what his next movie is. But this was his project for a while, and so I've kind of had it in the back of my head for so long. But I know what he does now. I know what he's kind of about, and what he recommends to people is crap. Like, how can I take him seriously? And with Robert Rodriguez, there's some really fun stuff that he's done. But then there's the Spy Kids franchise, and I think those, and that's almost unwatchable.
Those are pretty good, actually. I like those.
I have had to watch all of them because my son was into them, like 2010, 11, and whatnot. Thank God he stopped being into them, because I couldn't imagine having to ever watch them again. That was just my point of view. Too dumb, not enough fun for me. So I've been on the fence about this movie for so long, and I didn't get to see it. I mean, you know, Saturday night, I really don't want to go. We pushed off movie times two straight times, and then yesterday, you know, we've got some weather around here, so I used that as my excuse not to go to the theater, because I wasn't feeling strong enough about this one, and it sounds like I made a reasonable decision, at least.
Yeah, my son wanted to see it, and then as soon as it got close, he's like, I don't really feel like watching it. Since then, I watched, like, all the How to Train Your Dragon movies. So I'm prepared for next week. In terms of Rodriguez, I like the way he goes about filmmaking. He has some duds, don't get me wrong, and he's got some overrated movies that I mean, I like Desperado and all that, but it's not what everybody pretends it is. But I don't know, I just like the way I just kind of like his mindset and the way, you know, the approach he has, but that doesn't always translate to quality. I know.
Yeah, I like I said, the first two-thirds of this movie is exceptionally well directed and well put together, and he did a great job bringing out these two unknown actors and bringing a lot out of them that you wouldn't expect, and surrounding them with a lot of people. There's a lot of Academy Awards in this with Jennifer Connelly, Christoph Waltz, and Jackie Earle Haley.
Ali.
Mahershala Ali. Yeah, there's a lot of Academy. There's the cameo guy even has some Academy notice. Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. So it's smartly played in that way. But just the ending is just so bad. It is just so bad.
Part of the problem I remember with Ghost in the Shell was, like, it's kind of set up future movies that we thought would be better, and that was kind of what was wrong with the first one, aside from other issues that we all fought over. But it sounds like this is the same thing, too, where they're trying to set up sequels. Hmm. The whole cameo is about sequels, is it not?
Pretty much, yeah.
So is that kind of where it falls apart, is the third act trying to prepare you for the next movie?
There's that, and there's the character decision that she makes that I didn't buy into, and then the movie has to live into that. And the ending is really illogical in the way that they set up the sequel, because the way that they're playing it out doesn't make any sense for the cameo character. You know, the big bad, why it would end the way it does and set up a sequel doesn't make any sense.
It's too bad that, like, if you asked me in 1996, 97, or, like, especially after Sin City, you know, in 2019, Robert Rodriguez is going to be directing something that James Cameron has written and produced, and I said, take my money. Like, that's, I would have said that now, and now I'm kind of patting myself on the back for knowing better.
Yeah, for me, it was when I... Like, Sin City comes out, I'm like, this guy's amazing. And I knew other things he did. I didn't know everything he did, some of which I'd seen, not realizing he did it. Like, one of those bad 90s horror movies.
From Dusk Till Dawn?
No, that one's not bad.
yeah.
And that's also halfway Tarantino, too. That's not just Rodriguez. But it was like a Katie Holmes movie or something like that. Or,
oh, The Faculty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that one.
That was like the poor man's I Know What You Did What Last Summer, which was the poor man's Scream. So, but I don't know. I was kind of excited. It's hard to say I get excited anymore because we see so many damn movies. But I was, of all the ones my son wants to see, I was kind of like, yeah, this is something different.
Yeah.
But I didn't get a chance. Happy Death Day to you.
Yes, Happy Death Day to You, starring Jessica Roth as Tree, back in the role of Tree. She was, of course, in the last movie, just basically doing Groundhog Day as a horror movie, where she kept waking up every day after having been murdered and having to try and solve her own murder in order to get out of the loop. She'd made it out of the loop, but now we're back in this movie, and they've added a sci-fi element to it, where... there's a group of scientists who are working on a project on the campus, and it turns out that their project was related to her getting stuck in this time loop. And when the project is nearly shut down, she gets caught up in the loop again and has to go through this again in a different way, in sort of a different universe entirely. And this goes into multiverse theory and adds some other elements in that way that is really clever and gives you kind of another reason to invest in this story all over again. This is, you know, I loved it because. What I liked about the first movie is they didn't explain why she was stuck in this. It just was kind of a thing, and she had to solve her own murder to get out of it. So I didn't like seeing necessarily there was an explanation for why this happened. But the movie makes up for that by being even funnier than the last movie, and much funnier. And they really, not that it's a comedy, but they really find that vein of dark horror-related humor. And she's just a movie star. She really is. She's so very, very good. She just seems so natural when she's doing the comedy part of it, when she's doing the heroic part of it, the bitchy part of it. She's just fantastic. There's just this really weird, funny moment where she jumps out of a plane wearing a bikini, just no parachute, because she's got to kill herself to get to the end of this particular day. And you see her falling in slow motion past these two other characters, and she just flips them both the bird. And it's so funny. I just love her. She's just so great. She's got everything. She's the reason why this could be a franchise. There's even a great smart, funny sequel tease in here that takes it off into another direction.
That's interesting.
Especially, it finished fifth place this week, as I saw in terms of money, but for something like this, did it already kind of make
it
enough to be profitable?
Back.
Yeah,
so it's at $13 million well now, and it's budget of $9 million plus whatever they spent on marketing.
That's pretty smart. You know, this whole angle of remaking Groundhog Day, but not remaking Groundhog Day. I watched the first episode of a show on Netflix called Russian Doll this past weekend, starring Natasha Lyonne, of all people. Like, I haven't seen her in a decade plus, where it really invites that same thing. I mean, she dies, and then she wakes back up in the same particular spot. I'm wondering, how is this all of the rage? Is it millennials discovering Groundhog Day and thinking that they can do it better, but they can't do a remake of that? Does that make sense? I don't know. It just seems a little too convenient. I like the idea. I really do. But
well, no, I mean, I've told you about the Groundhog Day, about the guy trying to lose his virginity or whatever, and every time I talked about it on the show before.
You have.
I don't remember the name of it. But, yeah, it's been this would have been the movie I was going to see. My main question was, how do you sequelize this and where they go? What you said is kind of a neat idea. So I'm glad they at least had a clever way to have a reason. I'm shocked that there's a tease for a third or fourth one. But, you know, if they can make it work.
I'm all for it. She's Jessica Roth is a true movie star, and I can't wait to see what she does next. I hope, hopefully she'll stay away from the Forever My Girl movies and stick with this kind of thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see her branch out to something more mainstream success instead of just a $10 million success.
But not a superhero or a Star Wars film, right?
Something original.
Okay.
But successful. They don't make those anymore. That's why I'm hoping for
it. Yeah, I mean, this, you know, this is a pretty original one. And I mean, obviously, the inspiration, but I mean, in terms of it's its own thing. You know, it's not a comic book. It's not a book. They may have nicked some of the premise of Groundhog Day, but they made it their own.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely its own. But I mean, I don't really know her outside of this
right.
two movies, so that's kind of what I mean by it.
Even in Forever My Girl, she's not bad. It's the whole movie that's really terrible, and she's just kind of trapped in within all the terrible.
Which I'll never have to see. So. Isn't it romantic?
You want a surprise? This movie is a surprise. This is one of the funniest movies I've seen in a long time. This movie's incredible. Rebel Wilson is the star here, and of course, this is a very gimmicky premise of her getting a hit on the head and ending up in a romantic comedy universe. And this is the second week in a row where we've had head injury based humor, setting up a predictable premise. But Rebel Wilson is the key here. Rebel Wilson is fantastic as this character named Natalie. She hates romantic comedies. She grew up loving them, but then her mom kind of talked her out of it, and she became sort of cynical and sort of shy and sad. And then she gets bonked on the head and ends up in this romantic comedy universe where Liam Hemsworth is desperate to sleep with her and falling in love with her. And New York looks beautiful, and there's flowers everywhere, and everybody's kind, and all the men are beautiful and hitting on her. And she hates it. She can't stand this universe. It's like she's in the Matrix, and she realizes it. Like, and none of this is real. And she keeps calling out how everything is bullshit, down to her super gay best friend, and just the obviousness of every trope. This movie earns laughs with music cues. That's how smart and funny this movie is. The music cues will make you laugh when you hear Annie Lennox or the Coors or the it's so perfect. They come in just at the right moment. There's a couple of great musical segments in this. They do a full musical number, and then afterwards she's like, "Yeah, but how did everybody know the choreography?" So great. Everything about this movie is just fun. Her and terrific chemistry. They had the same chemistry in the Pitch Perfect movies, and they've extrapolated that here to something even more. I really adore this movie. It is absolutely hysterical.
Go figure. Well, my wife and I became the picture of American couplehood when we were going to go to the theater at the same time. She was going to go see that one on her own, and I was going to go see Alita, you know, of course, because I couldn't possibly want to see that. But I actually kind of do, because I like Rebel Wilson more than perhaps a standard 39-year-old dude should like. But the concept also seemed kind of cool, like... turning it on its head, being in a universe, adding a bit of a sci-fi angle to something that shouldn't have one. So I think I will see it now, for sure.
What was that Amy Adams movie where she played like a cartoon princess?
Enchanted? Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, it sounds like in that vein, only a little bit, kind of a different premise. I don't know. I was hoping to possibly talk my wife into going to this one, but she didn't want to do anything, so I watched How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2.
Excellent.
Yeah, Rebel Wilson is as much a movie star as Jessica Roth. She's brilliant. She's one of the funniest people working today. I've recommended 2 out of the 3 Pitch Perfect movies because of her, because of how great she is.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
Sticking with the romantic comedy theme, Harold and Maude.
Hipster and Maude.
Yeah, Sean was calling it the hipster romantic comedy.
I know a lot of hipsters who love this movie, and they see it as their favorite romantic comedy because I guess that's an affront to the rest of us somehow, I guess. I don't know. It's about a teenage boy and an old lady who have a romance. It's directed by Hal Ashby, and we've talked about Hal Ashby before on the show with Shampoo, which I didn't like at all, with Warren Beatty. And this one kind of has a similar pointlessness to me. That I appreciate Hal Ashby. I think Being There is an incredible movie. I just don't quite follow this one. Like, it's weird and awkward, and I get that that's kind of the point, but I don't know. He repeatedly fakes his own suicide in the movie, which is, I guess, and it's meant to be funny, and I guess I was kind of amused by it, but I was also kind of like, I did the thing that I'm sure every hipster would be upset about, is I kept siding with his mom. Like, she kind of seems kind of reasonable in comparison. He's kind of a dick. I mean, yeah, granted, she's out of touch. She's rich and out of touch and kind of bitchy. But at the same time, he's elaborately murdering himself and destroying her house and just constantly getting in her way. And she doesn't seem to be that unreasonable. And I know that's like the antithesis of what this movie's supposed to be about, because she's the establishment and he's a rebel and we're supposed to be on his side. Eh. She buys him a really nice car, and what does he do with it? He fucking ruins it by turning it into a hearse. I don't know. I like them as a couple, I guess. They're kind of cute, I guess. They kind of have a weird chemistry to them. But I don't know. And I didn't really buy into it either.
Well, right. You want to go? You want me to?
Go ahead.
I'm kind of two minds, where it's like, on one hand, it's kind of original idea I've never seen before. It was watchable. On the other hand, I was kind of like, I'm not going to get that time back. I didn't hate it. I mean, it was kind of a fine experience, but I didn't need that experience, I guess. What I'm getting at.
You know, I actually, I'm going to be the dissenting opinion on this one. I really liked it.
So you're a hipster, though.
As soon as you said that, I said, oh, crap, they're going to label me hipster again. But, you know, I really like movies where a director likes characters, and these two characters have a connection. Whatever off-putting, weird, like, thing that I can't personally connect to is there, it's still there, and it's done really well. Like, something that inspires joy in somebody that doesn't have any joy in their life. I was thinking of all angles for what he was doing with the suicides. Yes, he's definitely taking it too far, because he's not even trying to listen to anyone. But if I was in that scenario, what would I do to get attention? I might go that far. I mean, you know, I might at least want to shock somebody into thinking, like, what you're doing is pissing me off.
But he didn't appear to like need her attention. Like she was paying attention to him.
The right
just,
kind
I think,
of attention.
I think she was just kind of. I just think she was kind of tired of his bullshit. Like,
okay.
I mean, here's yeah. He has everything. His family is super rich. It's not like he wants for anything. So what exactly is he rebelling against?
I would guess the lack of connection that he has with like his home and. If anything, what I see in that situation is, Mom, it seems like he's clearly into special effects. Guide him down that path. but she's trying to force him into a bubble that he is just, he's never going to fit into. And to find somebody, whoever that is, to finally give you that sense of home, that give you that sense of closure, the movie does a wonderful job of expressing that. And I know of Cat Stevens, obviously. I've heard some of his music. My dad really liked Cat Stevens, but I'm not a huge fan of him. But I liked this soundtrack. It really seemed to fit well. It was almost very Harry Nilsson-like in a way, but just better. And then there's not a super depressing movie to go along with that. Okay, so I'm kind of a big fan of this movie, and it's a hidden little gem for me that I'm completely surprised that it turned out the way that it did. Just looking at the video jacket for the longest time, I could have swore that Bud Cort was way younger than his character, and that this was like a whoa type of romance, as opposed to being like wrong maybe, but just slightly awkward instead. We're not really sure what age Bud Cort's character is. After all, his mom's buying him a car, so he's of driving age. But also, she's trying to marry him off. So, which one is it? I don't know. The third wife, that prospective wife that his mom chose for him, that was really getting into the Romeo and Juliet scene with him, I thought that he might have turned the corner there in finding a more age-appropriate partner, because at least she was into what he was doing, and maybe after the film he will go back to her. But spoiler alert. I found a lot of joy in watching this despite its massive awkwardness.
Would she go back to him? Because isn't that the one where he lights himself on fire?
No, that's a different one. That one, she's just like, I gotta get out of here. But go ahead. It seems like you were about to say something.
Well, I mean, it's kind of mean, just based on your opinion, but it reminds me of a Wes Anderson movie.
Fuck.
I mean, am I wrong?
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's kind of
you're not wrong.
Like, I can see Royal Tenenbaum characters in through this.
Hal Ashby is definitely an influence on Wes Anderson. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, shit.
You don't see it?
Shakes a fist at Bob, but yeah, you're right.
Which, oddly enough, I never even thought about until you started talking, which makes no sense to me. But as you're talking about, I'm like, oh my God, this is...
It's the same, a very similar quirky sensibility.
And one of the better ones. I mean, I don't like everything he does. I mean, I really like Royal Tenenbaums a lot, and I'm kind of thinking of that one in particular. Like, I can see those characters in this movie, I guess is more what I'm saying opposed to anything.
Sure. Gosh, you know what? I can see that, too. It may have something to do purely with the characters being similar, but the direction is subtly different enough. Honestly, I may have a point here. Please, I want to be corrected if I'm wrong. Wes Anderson's direction is subtler. There's like focusing the camera on a wall, and on the wall is a cutesy little frame of something. Okay, and I mean, groan. I'm groaning in my head just thinking about it. Right? It's not so cute that you have to focus on it as part of your film. Okay, it can be in the room, but he needs to focus on it. Hal Ashby's just showing these characters in all of their weirdness. Yes. So character-wise, I get it, but it is a different way of presenting it to us.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but you're also going into it with a completely clean slate, too. There's no bias going into the movie. That helps, doesn't it?
Well, it did before this one. I mean, I'm not watching any more Hal Ashby movies.
Well, you really do need to see Being There, though.
Is that Robin Williams? Sellers?
Peter Sellers.
Okay.
Robin Williams has nothing to do with it.
Has that been on the show yet?
I don't think so.
Good.
It's a political satire. You've heard of it.
Is it left wing?
It's pretty much all political, but a lot of people talked about it during the Bush administration, because this is a guy, he plays a character who has no personality, no education, and really just kind of off the cuff, and just kind of stands there and looks at people and listens, and people assume that he's smart enough to be the next president of the United States.
I see your angle.
So a lot of people talked about Being There during that time and being a kind of reflective of how we came to pick that president. Okay.
That can be my first right-wing political base.
Maybe around election time next election. That could be a classic.
Yeah.
Unless we have a reason to have it earlier. But yeah, I mean, I like the originality of it, if nothing else.
I don't hate it. I just don't, I don't really buy into it the same way.
I got more of a kick out of the fact that, you know, we were calling a romantic comedy. She's 80. He's, I mean, it,
but that, I think the transgressiveness of that idea is what appeals to a lot of people, even more than the quirkiness and even more than the connection between the two of them. Just saying that you like Harold and Maude is kind of like having a picture. It's like having a nice, you know, it's a coffee table book that people can look at and see how cool you are.
I will not purchase the film. It's not going to be on my show. So at least I'll create some distance between what I'm saying here. Crap.
It's an ornament of lifestyle for many people.
But you're right. There, he doesn't focus on any pictures on the wall. So that's the one thing you hate about Wes Anderson.
You know exactly what I mean.
I'm with you. I don't. It's hit or miss for me. But I mean, the quirky characters in the right story, to me, like, I really, really, really like Royal Tenenbaums for whatever reason.
I like Rushmore.
Rushmore, too.
I like Moonrise Kingdom.
I like Life Aquatic, I'm more,
Yeah, that doesn't work.
And then I just kind of stopped watching them. There's a couple other ones that I'm kind of neither here nor there on, but
I think I was most happy with the Grand Budapest Hotel, of all things. That was the one that I found least offensive.
Solid movie.
There's a Wilson and the Tenenbaums, or both Wilsons are in it. Never mind. Yeah. I understand now.
There's a film from 1984 or 85 called Mickey and Maude with Dudley Moore and I think Maude Adams and Amy Irving, if I'm not mistaken. And multiple times throughout this film, I was thinking of, oh, but wait, doesn't this happen so that he, like, gets them confused? Wait a minute. No, that was Dudley Moore. It's a completely separate film. I just happened to watch that a lot as a kid. Harold and Maude, Mickey and Maude are not the same film at all. This one's much better.
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear? Grace! Grace, she passed away 30 years ago.
Josh?
1989 has four films that were released this week 30 years ago, and we're starting to finally get something of note with this week's releases. Three of them that I definitely remember, and one of them I was kind of interested for the Robert Downey Jr. angle, and that's where I'll start with True Believer. Now, it also has James Woods in it. That's unfortunate. Every single time the man opens his mouth or puts something on Twitter, I just grow less and less interested in ever seeing anything that he's involved in. But that aside, Robert Downey Jr. is also in it, and it focuses on a cynical former civil liberties attorney now reduced to specializing in defending drug dealers, and he becomes transformed by an 8-year-old murder case. This is different than The Believers, which is that's not the same thing. Getting confused by titles this week. But have either of you seen this one?
Sounds vaguely familiar, but
anytime we get Robert Downey Jr. involved in a film at any point, I feel like I should see it because he's such a critical darling from his earlier career until he started to fall off and not get as many roles. But Also, one that I didn't watch, but I wish I would have because I remember it on the shelf, The Mighty Quinn. It stars Denzel Washington, one of his first leading roles, as well as Robert Townsend. I don't know if this is based on a book or not, but it certainly has the descriptor of a type of a novel almost. Excuse me. When police officer Xavier Quinn's childhood friend, Mobby, becomes associated with murder and a briefcase full of $10,000 bills, the Mighty Quinn must clear his name or try to catch him, which could be even trickier. This looks like Private Eye, but for the Caribbean or something like that. And it just seems like the kind of thing that would be a serial novel. I didn't look into it to see if it was. Maybe somebody can tell me more about it. But if you've got Denzel Washington as the leading man, I am at least interested. Have either of you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Sorry.
I wasn't aware of that one.
I have seen the other two, though.
Yes, of course. We'll start with The Burbs, short for The Suburbs.
Ah.
The cast. Okay, for those that are not familiar.
It's my old boy moment.
Wow. it's a Joe Dante film. He of Gremlins and other various things. But stars Tom Hanks and Carrie Fisher. Bruce Dern is even in this one. Corey Feldman. Okay, I saw it in the theater for whatever reason, and I remember not liking it, even though it was Princess Leia. That's what my parents kept saying. Princess Leia is in it, Princess Leia. I'm like, oh, okay, no problem. I'm there. And I remember not liking it, thinking, this is like either way too dark or not funny enough or something like that. And in watching it this weekend, it's way worse than that. It doesn't find a lane. It's not funny at all. In fact, I don't remember laughing once. The eccentricities of Tom Hanks are not well directed in this film. He's required to scream, but it's like for no reason. And it's not funny. Carrie Fisher is bored. She's playing the wife trying to get Tom Hanks off of the ledge that the neighbors are serial killers, okay? And why go through an hour and a half of this nonsense just to prove that they literally are serial killers? I don't know. There's just something completely wasted about this movie. It's such an obvious metaphor, like, your neighbors are serial killers. We're the suburbs in the 80s. White people, you know? Like, it's so boring and bad and unfunny. And I wish, the good thing is it's on Prime. So if you have Prime, you can just stream it.
I loved it as a kid. I've not watched it since then, so I don't. I intentionally, because I doubt it would hold up for an adult. But as a kid, I loved it. I loved the idea of they're investigating their neighbors to find out if they're serial killers. And I think it felt the premise has probably been repeated a couple times since then. So it's probably less fresh now, which I'm kind of glad I didn't watch it again. But I've always been a big fan of 80s Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah. I don't like other Tom Hanks movies because of 80s Tom Hanks. That's my Tom Hanks. And because of those roles, I can't see him being an army general or, you know, the only thing I can see him have is AIDS. I mean, I bought that, but everything else, I just have a hard time. I have a hard time not seeing this guy, the screaming and yelling.
That's the thing. Normally, that's hilarious. Like in The Money Pit or Joe versus the Volcano, something like that. That's where everything that's happening around him is so completely bonkers, then all that you can do is join him in crazy misery. He does a great job of expressing that. It should be the same in this film, but it's not. It doesn't help that his the guy he's playing off of his neighbor, I can't remember the guy's
Rick
name. Thank you. Basically, Kurt Fuller Light. I've never seen him in another thing since then, despite, or at least that I'm aware of, because that face looks very familiar to me. But
well, if you ever watched A&E late night when they did their comedy shows, you saw Rick Dukeman all the time, and that's where I saw him, and that's where I developed a real soft spot for him. That and he's in Groundhog Day as well, as one of the drunks in the car with Bill Murray.
That's right. Pancakes. Yeah.
Flapjacks.
That's him. I was familiar with him as a comedian even before I saw this movie. So seeing him in the movie, I was really excited to see him, and I really liked him. Again, I don't know if this movie would hold up if I watched it again, but
I didn't watch it either, so I'm basing it off of my nostalgia.
Sure thing. It's funny that you said watching A&E late at night. I was too busy watching Silk Stockings and USA Up all night.
Me too.
So, you know, it took me a while to attempt culture. Definitely
however,
not then.
You said you're watching that before this came out?
Their comedy show, the Night at the Improv and stuff like that.
So, I was still probably 3 years away from Up All Night and Silk Stockings at this point.
At this time, yes.
And then what else we got?
The biggest release, the most well-known release, still kind of in the news in a way, because just today I saw that the third proposed film in the franchise is going to start filming this spring. Yay! It's very exciting for me, at least.
Bill and Ted's Face the Music.
Yes, that's right. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure turns 30, and I watched it last week in preparation for this week because I had my son and I wanted to have him see the movie and see the kinds of dunces that I grew up with, them and Wayne's World and maybe much later Beavis and Butthead, that kind of thing. But I found this film incredibly endearing. These characters are lovable, gross at times, immature, all of the things that we would expect from an 80s film, including some unfortunate words from time to time. But the situation itself, it's brisk. It's got an interesting kind of fun idea. If you suspend disbelief completely and don't think for a moment, like, why would these historical figures like Johann Sebastian Bach not, like, ask, what is happening right now? No, and they can all speak English in a certain... Yeah, don't think about it at all. Just enjoy it. Enjoy George Carlin as Rufus. It's actually a hell of a lot of fun, and it's son-approved as well. He really enjoyed it.
I had a lot of fun with this movie this week because... If you want to have fun with people my age, you tell them that this movie is 30 years old and just watch their faces deflate as they recall how old they are. That was a lot of fun this week. The movie for me is forgettable. I don't mind it. It's fine. I just don't care. Bill and Ted was kind of my sister's thing. You know, she had a big thing for Keanu Reeves back then, and I just didn't really get into it, and I don't really get into this movie. And I don't know what it is. I prefer my stupid to be Beavis and Butthead.
And I was more into Beavis and Butthead and Wayne's World than this. So in a way, I understand what you're saying by forgettable. But rewatching it, it really made me kind of bummed at Beavis and Butthead and Wayne's World, because I know you can go back to like Cheech and Chong and all these other buddy kind of comedies, but those all, evolved and were completely different. This to Wayne's World, to Beavis and Butthead are like all the same thing, and this one came first, and they ripped the hell out of this movie, especially Wayne's World. It really bothered me almost how much Wayne's World ripped from this. I didn't even really think about it until I saw this, and but it was a ton of fun. I mean, even, you talk about the suspending disbelief. All they did was go back in time and grab historical figures. How they learned anything, I don't know.
I'm still not sure they did.
They just brought the figures up to tell the story on the stage. But it was still fun. I enjoyed the whole thing. My kids liked it. It was an easy watch. Like, brisk was a great word to describe this movie. I don't know. I'm curious how they're going to do part 3, because I kind of liked the idea initially, but now that I've seen this one, they're supposed to be the greatest band in the world in the future, but it sounds like now they're not. I don't know, maybe I'm looking too much into the title.
But. Or their sound was not understood at the time, and so kind of like Genius isn't appreciated in its time, blah, blah, blah.
I think
blah,
they explained that in the second film.
Yeah, and you know, I started watching the first 20 minutes of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey as well, just to try and keep the story going. It's already completely tonally different than the first one, not as fun, just kind of like tongue-in-cheek. And I haven't got William Sadler on screen yet, and I know he was a lot of fun as death.
As a kid, I liked that one better, but I know that that's an unpopular opinion, so, and I haven't watched it in years, so I don't know. But
I don't see Bill and Ted as a memorable classic, but it could just be me.
You know, the really... and I can understand why if you're opting for a different idiot duo, because I much prefer like Beavis and Butthead or Wayne's World, because it's just slightly edgier, or the humor is a little darker, I guess. But then again, this is still in our culture. I mean, the Lego right. Movie 2, last week, we watched Bill and Ted, and then the next day we see a movie where it's got a Bill and Ted reference right there in the Lego Movie 2. Like, not that movie's doing gangbusters like the first one was, but it's in the culture to a pretty high degree, considering it's only like a $40-some million movie from 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, well, it spawned its own cartoon, did it not, if I'm not mistaken?
That's right, there was a cartoon. Wow.
I mean, if I'm picking a duo, I'm picking Jay and Silent Bob. But still, I know I'm with you. It was a lot of fun. I kind of want to see Bogus Journey, but I'll probably wait for the full 30 years.
I found Bogus Journey to be even more disappointing.
It's on Prime, so know, you can disappoint yourself for free.
I appreciate a dumb comedy that references, I would forget the reference, the Swedish, famed Swedish director.
Not Lasse Hallström.
The legendary
Bergman.
One. Yes. The character of death is a reference to his character.
Right.
So that's fine, but they kind of do overplay that just a tad in that movie.
It did give us the Kiss tune, God Gave Rock and Roll.
Make fun of Kiss all you want.
No, I'm not. What I enjoy is giving the example of the moment when these particular rock and roll bands decided to sell out for a moment.
Well, Kiss sold out way before then.
So
they
the
had a
one
disco
moment,
track, man.
See, when the popular opinion is that the Beatles are one of the greatest bands of all time, I'm sitting over here like, no, they're not. Like, I gotta have something to latch on to and make fun of you. So.
Well, I've been sitting on this for way too long, but to me, like, Kiss is to music what Star Wars is to movies.
True.
Are you trying to kill Josh? Are you trying to kill him?
Well, I'm not a huge Kiss fan.
Murderer!
So it's not really...
I find your lack of faith disturbing. That's the only response to that, right?
They're both really popular. It's kind of not a whole lot of substance, just a lot of popularity.
In modern Star Wars, or the modern of the 2000s, early 2000s, is very mercenary, not unlike Gene Simmons.
They blow a lot of shit up, and they're popular.
Peter Chris is kind of the Jar Jar Binks.
Even I know that's funny.
Maybe the replacement of Peter Chris. Anyway, that's 89. Anything else that we're forgetting on the show? Next week, we've got How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes!
That's some weird porn movie alternate universe there you got going on.
It's a different kind of Undisputed Classic.
Part 3.
I didn't see the first two. Well, I know what's happening.
You're going to have to watch them both. I watch with my kids too. Jeez. Yeah, but How to Train Your Dragon 3, Fighting with My Family, and Run to the Race. What is that? I don't remember.
That's
that
I think it's a religious movie.
Oh, we might not talk about that one. we'll probably talk about all the How to Train Your Dragon movies just because. And then our classic to go along with Fighting With My Family is...
The Wrestler.
The Wrestler, starring Mickey Rourke. Darren Aronofsky film. I've got money that Josh hates it.
The Wrestler?
The reason I'm saying that is... Well, hate's the wrong word. It's...
I don't think you can't appreciate it the way we do.
Well, no, I think he'll appreciate it, but it'll be like a Requiem for a Dream type of scenario where I don't want to watch this again.
But not the way we appreciate it. Because we recognize this character that and those characters.
I think there'll be also a little bit of like the Everest movie, like, well, stop doing it, and I'll feel sorry for it.
I think I know Aronofsky enough at this point, because I've only seen all of his films. Oh, no, Black Swan I saw twice. I mean, but you really only need to see them one time. If you're a film buff and you want to point out, like, the way that he's doing it. I don't know. I don't have a desire to see Mother again, you know. I definitely don't want to see Requiem again. And Pi is like, I have a similar feeling about that. The I've Fountain was so Pi. Bad, I don't want to see it again. I mean, Noah was...
I've never seen Noah. I've never seen... Well, maybe I did see Noah. I just forgot already. I think we rented that. I haven't seen Pi, though. That's the only one I haven't seen, so... Well, I'm sure we'll bring Requiem and Pi and all these movies to the podcast. At some point, we're going to run out of classics at some point. But it's definitely a different movie than what most of other Aronofsky movies are. Definitely a totally different style. But I'm definitely curious your opinion, though. It'll be fun.
It's been sitting in my queue for the longest time on Amazon, like 3-4 years, literally. And so it's going to be like that scenario where I finally watch it and remove it from the watch list, and the list finally moves to the right, you know, as opposed to, yeah.
If you really want to have the experience, you should probably watch the documentary Beyond the Mat first and then watch this movie. It'll add a whole other dimension to it.
If you can find it.
I've heard of Beyond the Mat, though, probably through you guys, but...
It'll make you look at The Rock differently.
Oh, okay.
At least for one match.
This would be the week to do it with the money coming
out. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think it's hard to find, though. You might even have to go to YouTube for it, from what I understand. It's possible.
Well, that is... I'm sorry, I can't watch it. That is the one streaming app that I never look at to find the movies that we're trying to watch. I don't know what that is.
What are the 88 movies next week?
We have two. One of them's called High Hopes. I believe that's a Cheech and Chong movie that we were just talking about. And the other one is... It's a Michael Dudikoff movie, American Ninja 3.
Is Michael Dudikoff not in it?
Wait, I assumed he was. I
don't think he is.
And High Hopes is not a Cheech and Chong movie either. It should be, though.
Oh, wait. That's a Mike Lee movie. It's going to be the absolute opposite of a weed movie.
Mike Lee directing Cheech and Chong? What?
Wow. It'd be abstract. It'd be set in England in a slum.
Cheech counting matches.
I don't think we can light it today.
My cousin, he tweeted at me earlier this week. He said Paul Schrader's working on a new movie.
Yes.
And
a Western.
The way they described it was if Malick and Lynch shit on a script. So I don't even know what that means. But he was like, I'm intrigued. I'm like, I don't know that I am. I mean, Paul Schrader has made great movies, and he's made some of the worst movies of all time. And then you know where I stand on Malick and Lynch. There's definitely some... I like it when it's dark, and I don't like it when it's not. But it's... I don't know.
I'm holding out to the final runtime.
5 hours and 20 minutes. But that is our show. Before I let you go, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. We will start off with our key grip level and Charlie Messing and the Hall of Famer Jason Bryant. Our character actor is Christina Cato, Josh Paul, and Cousin Jeff.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects levels, Sarah Morrell and Corey from IVNV.
May the Force be with you.
And you guys had me so nervous that I was like really mean to him that I texted him, hey, just so you know, on the show. And then he responds with, I hate to break this to you, but you forgot to put the second half of your show up. For whatever reason, I got this new recorder, and after a certain amount of time, it just cuts the show in half, and I have to paste them together. I just didn't do it. So I released it in two parts last week. Double the downloads, though.
It totally worked, though, because it was the second part.
I know. It was like the 1 week to do it. Lego, the second part. Our associate producer, Jason Mollett.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Dave Sievers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon. To get yourself a credit on the show. If you want some merch, ihatecritics.net and click on the podcast merch tab. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. The friends that three best friends that anyone...
Fargo or As Good As It Gets?
Fargo.
Psycho or Memento?
Ooh, that is tough, honestly. I love Psycho, but Memento is kind of like a monumental movie for me. I got to go with Memento.
I will too. The only thing pushing me in that direction is for basically like a cancel each other out situation is the Christopher Nolan loyalty.
And that's why I'm going Psycho. Which I do like Memento a lot, though. The Talented Mr. Ripley or Bridget Jones' Diary?
Talented Mr. Ripley.
I will have to go Bridget Jones here.
I go with Talented Mr. Ripley.
That's probably one that we need to bring to the show.
I agree. Shrek the Third, Little Miss Sunshine.
Little Miss Sunshine.
Agreed.
Gandhi or Big Trouble, Little China?
Big Trouble in Little China. Gandhi is so long. It is so long. It's so boring.
Yeah, you know, in the day where you could try and make the beta tapes record like up to 6 hours, and my parents would try and fit three onto one tape, Gandhi was still just one.
So long.
But oh that God. Being said, I'll take Gandhi.
How many Lord of the Rings equals a Gandhi?
Well, time-wise, it's not the length of it. It's how long it seems. So for me, every bit of Lord of the Rings is watchable. So to me, it goes by like that. For you guys, it's akin to watching Gandhi twice, I'm sure.
Is Gandhi 6 hours long?
It just feels like it.
Yeah, it's over three and under four.
Up or Dick Tracy?
Up.
Up.
Under Siege or Cars?
Cars.
That's okay, you can take it.
Birthday Cake scene in Under Siege over Cars.
God damn it. I was going Cars all the way until you said Insomnia or Temple of Doom?
Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom.
Insomnia, but it doesn't matter.
Insomnia is a good movie.
Chooses the Nolan film of.
Oh, yeah, I like that one. So much I'm not a Harrison Ford fan. City Slickers or Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
City Slickers. Maverick. Mel Gibson or the Hollow Man with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, Hollow Man is so bad. Maverick.
You know, okay, this requires a Verhoeven thing from this week where Neil Blomkamp, I love the man, okay, but he was quoted as saying he wanted to get the RoboCop sequel. He wanted to get it as Verhoeven-y as possible. I'm like, what?
So he wants to make it really shitty. Yeah.
That's all I can think of. Then he said Hollow Man. I'm like, oh, God. Maybe Blomkamp needs to review Hollow Man just to make sure he gets it as Verhoeven-y as possible. But not that one. The other one.
Karate Kid Part 2 or Apocalypse Now?
Apocalypse Now.
There's another one that's so fucking long.
Doors in the background.
Yeah, but there's only like a small part of that film that I actually like. It's just a painful watch, you know, and not in a good way.
Lethal Weapon or Space Jam?
Boy, that's tough. That's a tough one. I love Space Jam. No, that's going to be Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
I hate voting against Space Jam too. The Mighty Ducks or Desperado?
Desperado.
Mighty Ducks.
Desperado. Is it because you like Mighty Ducks that much, or you dislike Desperado that much?
I would like to be on the record as once again saying how much I dislike hockey. Strongly, in fact. But that brings forth a sense of nostalgia in me. Desperado does not. I enjoy certain aspects of Desperado very much.
But there's no hatred towards it. It's more nostalgia.
Correct.
Gotcha. Superbad or Jumper?
Superbad.
Superbad.
Scrooged or The Terminal?
Scrooged. Fuck The Terminal. I don't say that. Do I say that enough on this show? I don't know if I say that enough on this show.
We just know that it's coming if The Terminal is mentioned. Scrooged it is.
King Arthur 2004, Van Helsing 2004.
Oh, man. Fishing with Gandhi.
Since you've already done that, I don't need to. King Arthur is the choice, but it's... it's a painful choice.
I haven't seen either one of them, so we'll go with that. A Fish Called Wanda, Rocky Balboa.
Fish Called Wanda, I guess. I don't know. I didn't really like either of those movies.
I liked Rocky Balboa
last time we talked about it.
Which one was that?
When he's as an old man fighting.
Yeah, Mason Rocky the Six. Lion Dixon.
Did I like that?
When we watched all of them, you liked it more than you thought you did.
Yeah, I guess I'll go with that. I don't remember.
I mean, clearly it made an impression. Legally Blonde 2, 10 Things I Hate About You.
10 Things I Hate About You. Legally Blonde 2 is pretty disappointing when you come off of how brilliant Legally Blonde is.
I will go with 10 Things I Hate About You, but yeah, it's the clear choice.
I agree. A League of Their Own, Beowulf, 2007.
League of Their Own, by a lot.
Up, Jerry Maguire.
Oh, that is tough. That is really difficult. Because Up is amazing. All the way through, not just the first 10 minutes. All of it is really good. But I've got a deep, deep affection for Jerry Maguire that I can't deny.
I'll have to go with Jerry Maguire. Almost overexposure to Pixar movies over the past 12 years probably does it for me.
Yeah, I agree. And the lack of Tom Cruise being characters like that. He's kind of just been an action hero since then. Gladiator, Any Given Sunday.
Damn it, I used Fishing with Gandhi.
You're not going to take Any Given Sunday over Gladiator.
I mean, I hate Gladiator, though. I really do.
I know, but talk about a long-ass movie.
Oh. The only exciting part is a dude losing an eyeball.
And even then, you kind of roll your eyes.
Yeah.
And that's not even a pun. That you literally like, Jesus Christ, this is dumb.
What, Gladiator?
What I have against Gladiator is that the almost famous thing. I'll always hold that against it, but it's better than Any Given Sunday.
Fine, whatever.
I think I've come to a conclusion that I love Gladiator, but mainly when it came out, they talked about how it was a throwback to sword and sandal things that hadn't been done for a while. And people never criticize the sword and sandal epics for being boring or bad or anything like that. And this
repetitious.
If that's the argument, I guess I will take repetitious over most things, because it's not bad to me. If anything, it's just kind of like, yeah, I've been here, done that. But it's shot so beautifully, and that score is one of my favorite scores of all time.
Well, for me, it's kind of like probably what could happen to Green Book or Bohemian Rhapsody or something. I shouldn't put Bohemian Rhapsody in the conversation, but movies I liked and then the Academy picks the wrong one and that just annoys me, and that's kind of where this one lies. I do like Gladiator a lot, but
it had no business being nominated, let alone winning Best Picture.
It's interesting. Yeah, I think at one time we mentioned City Slickers earlier, and at one time I did kind of like City Slickers.
Until he won the Best Supporting Actor.
Jack Palance won the Best Supporting Actor for that, and I'm like, that movie sucks. Are you kidding me? That movie you can't give him an Academy Award for that. But just because he's old and you recognize his name? Fuck you.
Popular Oscar moment.
And I wonder if I was older, if My Cousin Vinny would have had that effect on me or not. I mean, I'm like you with, you know, Sigourney Weaver and Aliens. I thought Marissa Tomei, you know, because I love that movie, but I could see in the moment people being like, what the fuck? In fact, they were, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, a lot of people thought there was somebody read the name wrong.
I don't know. I saw that at age 37, and it's wonderful.
Right, but I mean, seeing it, I don't know.
It's a terrific comic performance, and you can't. It's undeniable as much as many people might want to take away from her.
Tangled or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Tangled.
Tangled.
By a lot.
No amount of free popcorn can possibly make How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, because that's what I got for going to see it in the movie, was two huge tubs of free popcorn. Not worth it.
My Best Friend's Wedding, The Incredibles.
Incredibles, yeah.
Incredibles.
Even though I don't love Incredibles.
Tommy Boy, Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain.
I'm supposed to say Brokeback Mountain, right?
You can say whatever you want.
Tommy Boy.
I'll go Brokeback only because, I mean, I like Tommy Boy. I just don't have the connection to that as I do some of the other comedies of that era. But I do like it. Lethal Weapon 2, Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Wedding Crashers, High Fidelity.
High Fidelity.
High Fidelity.
Alien versus Predator. Or From Dusk Till Dawn.
I was about ready to blurt it out.
What would you have said?
Alien.
Over the greatest action movie of all time.
Okay, Aliens versus Predator. Because now you got action movie versus action movie, right? Or is Aliens not an action movie? Anyway, From Dusk Till Dawn, right?
No, I'm taking Alien versus Predator.